Ever wondered why dating feels like an unpaid internship in unwanted advances? Jeff Gunther's Big Dating Energy offers a refreshing take on modern romance that's resonating with millions. As a licensed therapist with 2 decades of experience, Gunther has become a social media sensation with over 2.7 million TikTok followers who tune in for his straightforward relationship advice. Unlike traditional dating guides that suggest changing yourself to find love, this book flips the script. Use dating to discover what you want, not to prove your likability to others. The book has struck a chord with celebrities like Selena Gomez, who champions its core message of authenticity, and has been featured on major platforms, including Good Morning America and The New York Times, for its practical, compassionate approach to relationship building. In our post-pandemic, politically charged era, Gunther's therapeutic framework combines cognitive behavioral, psychodynamic, feminist, narrative, and Rogerian approaches to help readers navigate the specific hellscape that is modern dating without losing themselves in the process. Before mastering authentic dating, we must understand what's been tripping us up, starting with our family's influence. Even the most nurturing parents pass along negative patterns that directly shape our adult relationships. Your parents or caregivers profoundly influenced how you approach romantic relationships by demonstrating relationship dynamics during your formative years. Your impressionable young brain absorbed whatever relational blueprint they presented, whether solid and reliable or fragile and unstable. A healing perspective to internalize? Your parents did the best they could, but you deserved better. This isn't about excusing them, but freeing yourself from resentment that poisons your current relationships. Every parent-child relationship experiences ruptures, breaks in connection ranging from small misunderstandings to huge fights. What matters isn't that these ruptures happened, but how your parents responded afterward. This response pattern directly influences how you expect romantic partners to respond during conflicts. If your parents typically noticed ruptures and addressed them quickly, validating your emotions and working through issues together, you likely developed secure attachment. If they didn't notice ruptures or couldn't repair them, leaving you to manage overwhelming emotions alone, you probably developed insecure attachment patterns. These early experiences programmed your emotional responses, either trusting that relationship systems will have your back or developing protective defenses that now activate automatically during conflicts. While securely attached people instinctively collaborate during disagreements, insecurely attached folks might prioritize their needs first or suppress them entirely. Beyond attachment styles, countless other family dynamics influence your relationship patterns. How did your parents handle conflict? Did they scream and slam doors or maintain seething silence? Did they resolve fights privately, leaving you to witness the tension but not the resolution? Even siblings played a crucial role. They were your first peer relationships, providing unlimited opportunities for disagreement. The specific conflict resolution patterns you developed with siblings significantly impact how you handle conflicts in adult romantic relationships. We've all experienced trauma, some subtle, some major, that shapes who we are. These traumas become the building blocks of our personality and lead us to develop protective defenses. While these defenses kept us safe, they can interfere with forming healthy relationships. Healing doesn't require perfect resolution of past trauma. You don't need to be fixed to find love. The goal isn't necessarily to resolve old dramas with your family, but to make the unconscious conscious. By bringing awareness to the defensive patterns you developed in childhood, you can choose different responses when triggered in current relationships. Capitalism fundamentally shapes how we relate to each other, encouraging traits like competitive individualism, power exertion, and quick abandonment of difficult situations. When these capitalist values infiltrate our relationships, they manifest as putting individual wants above relationship needs, obsession with being right, controlling behaviors, poor listening, retaliation when hurt, and withdrawing at the slightest inconvenience. Healthier approaches include validating everyone's experiences rather than seeking to be right, creating safe environments instead of controlling partners, practicing reflective listening, expressing pain openly, and doing the hard work of repair. We should also stop judging potential partners based on their economic success, as career achievement doesn't predict relationship success. Popular media rarely models healthy ways to resolve conflicts or flirt, leaving us craving, or at least accepting, relationship drama as the norm. Disney movies gave us warped ideas about relationships, exclusively heteronormative pairings, troubling consent issues, men kissing unconscious women, and harmful narratives like "I can change him." These films rush from initial attraction to lifetime commitment after minimal interaction, teaching us to sacrifice our identity for someone who barely knows us. Reality dating shows are psychological nightmares that we're collectively obsessed with. They manufacture artificial connections through adrenaline-pumping scenarios and constant dopamine hits, sending harmful messages that true love forms in weeks, relationships thrive on performative vulnerability, and you should discard partners at the first sign of imperfection. They tap into our inner romantic who wants to believe in love at first sight and soulmates, creating unrealistic expectations for perfect matches rather than authentic connections with real, flawed humans. Reality show producers excel at manufacturing the spark, that intense magnetic chemistry that seems like love. But on these shows, this spark is factory-made from competition, fear, fame-seeking, and anxiety masquerading as excitement. While sparks feel great, a relationship that's all chemistry without substance or bite lacks foundation for lasting connection. Celebrity culture warps our perception of relationships in two harmful ways. First, celebrities use PR teams to present perfect, strife-free relationships that hide the normal ups and downs of partnerships. Conversely, when celebrities lose narrative control, their relationships become public train wrecks we can't look away from, normalizing toxic patterns like codependency and emotional abuse. Social media promises meaningful connection but delivers isolation and loneliness. It creates jealousy and comparison as we see others' filtered highlight reels of perfect relationships. Remember that behind those grinning beach vacation photos, couples might be miserable. We simply don't know. Being authentic means being true to yourself, acting in alignment with your own personality, values, and core beliefs. Not the ones capitalism, pop culture, and social media have programmed into you, but the ones you've deliberately chosen to cultivate. Authenticity means expressing your thoughts and feelings without fear of judgment or societal pressure. It's literally the sexiest thing you can be, giving you the best chance to meet someone who matches all parts of you. Dating without knowing what you want is like grocery shopping without a list. You'll end up with marshmallows and Pop-Tarts instead of what you truly need. Big dating energy isn't about changing yourself to find the perfect partner. It's about understanding who you truly are, flaws and all, and letting that authentic self guide you toward relationships that support and heal rather than trigger and wound. Understanding your defense mechanisms is crucial to exploring your authentic self and determining what you need in a partner. These defenses develop to protect you from getting hurt, but they can sneakily sabotage your relationships if left unexamined. Whether you ghost people, become clingy, or build emotional fortresses, these mechanisms activate whenever you feel threatened, vulnerable, or exposed, even during minor conflicts. Beneath every defense mechanism lies a deeper fear. Common core fears include fear of vulnerability, abandonment, not being good enough, conflict, and not being loved for who you truly are. Having these fears is completely normal. We're all afraid sometimes, and that's simply part of being human. There's no magical cure for fear, but we deserve love despite our fears. The key is finding someone compassionate who won't re-traumatize us when we're triggered and act defensively. Creating three interconnected lists helps you date with intention rather than defaulting to the same wrong-for-you types. The first list identifies qualities you need in a partner to support your specific fears and defenses. For example, if you have abandonment fears, you might need someone who isn't avoidant, who can handle emotional expression without judgment, and who shares emotional labor. The second list covers non-negotiable qualities you absolutely must have, things like kindness, integrity, shared values, and empathy. The third list outlines deal breakers, automatic relationship enders like dishonesty, incompatibility with friends, opposing political views, or abusive behavior. These aren't mere preferences, but boundaries that protect you from harmful relationships. The ultimate goal is finding not just a fun relationship, but a healing one. Intimate relationships inevitably trigger childhood wounds and past relationship scars. When this happens, the right relationship will support growth and healing, while the wrong one won't. When you feel triggered and defensive, pause and check your lists. Does this person possess your needed qualities? Are they free of deal breakers? Are they a good match by your metrics? If yes, recognize your defensive reaction and allow yourself to be vulnerable. Let's be real. Dating apps are chaotic evil. They're owned by suspicious corporations and engineered to keep you hooked while pretending otherwise. Their singular goal is maximizing investor profits off your romantic heart and horny genitals. Most major dating apps belong to Match Group, which owns Tinder, OkCupid, Hinge, Plenty of Fish, and over 45 other dating platforms. These big dating fat cats don't care if you find love. In fact, their bottom line benefits when you don't. Each dating app has its distinct personality. Based on highly scientific research, here are the vibes. Tinder is for hookups, maybe more. Hinge attracts aesthetically conscious adults seeking commitment, but still cool enough for casual. Bumble appeals to long-term seekers with feminist leanings. Field champions non-monogamy. OkCupid is Gen X territory. Match still exists for older folks. eHarmony has religious undertones. Plenty of Fish caters to middle-aged normies who love dad jokes. Facebook dating is trying to be relevant, and Raya consults with the worst people in the world on your application. Creating an authentic profile requires vulnerability rather than glibness or contortion to fit perceived expectations. Include maximum photos showing the real you, not just landscapes or pets, with a mix of candid shots displaying your personality and activities. Be transparent about religious beliefs, politics, relationship intentions, monogamy preferences, age, height, children, and substances. Your bio should clearly state what you're seeking. Consult your lists. Dating app algorithms determine who you see, but you can game the system. First, engage more. Send likes, respond promptly, participate in banter. The algorithm rewards active users with better matches. Second, expand your search criteria. Broaden age ranges and stop obsessing over height. Finally, release your fixation on physical perfection. It's impossible to accurately assess physical chemistry from photos, and attraction often builds over time. Contrary to popular belief, you don't have to use dating apps. Studies show just as many people still meet their partners offline as online. Meeting people in real life offers advantages. You experience the genuine thrill of in-person connection rather than fleeting app validation. You can read body language and energy, verify appearance immediately, focus on fewer potential partners, feel safer, and appreciate the sexiness of someone's voice. To meet people in real life, you must, unfortunately, leave your house. Approach everyday encounters with rom-com optimism. Watch for people who maintain eye contact for 2 to 3 seconds, a sign they might welcome conversation. Skip clever pickup lines and simply say hi. At social venues, discuss topics genuinely interesting to you. If direct approaches terrify you, ask friends for setups. They know you well and often enjoy matchmaking. Only join kickball if you genuinely love it. The key is placing yourself among people who share your interests. Volunteer, join hobby groups, attend concerts or lectures. Regular participation means seeing the same people repeatedly, allowing you to develop rapport gradually. This slow-building connection creates anticipation and tension that's often lost in app-based dating, yet provides a stronger foundation for relationships. The messaging phase, that in-between space after matching online or getting a number but before meeting face-to-face, helps you screen potential dates efficiently. When reaching out, don't just say hey. Compliment something specific from their profile that reveals their authentic self. Establish playful banter with open-ended questions and be direct about your needs and deal breakers. If they're not reciprocating energy, showing intermittent interest, or asking invasive questions too quickly, these are red flags. First dates pack a multitude of human experiences into one short hang. Fizzing nerves, awkward hellos, endless possibilities, hope, excitement, and even the letdown of disappointment. Your first date blueprint consists of three key steps. First, ground yourself by reviewing your lists of wants/needs before the date to keep them fresh in your mind. Second, gas yourself up. Your only job is to be unapologetically yourself, as we're at our hottest when in alignment with our authenticity. Third, throw your expectations in the garbage, as text chemistry doesn't always translate to in-person connection. Everything on a first date is, to some degree, a projection. You're both trying to be sweet, funny, and adorable while projecting all over each other. Gross. Just because they mention loving beach days doesn't mean they share your life goal of retiring to a remote Maine island. First dates have built-in fantasy and artificiality. That's okay and expected. A first date has only one job, helping you figure out if you want a second date. Consider deciding beforehand that, barring catastrophe, you'll be open to a second date. First dates are weird, second dates are less weird, and give you a better sense of who someone is. If an obvious deal breaker presents itself, politely end things. Otherwise, give yourself the chance to learn more about this person. Go wherever you feel comfortable. Go wherever you can be yourself. If your date defers to you, pick a favorite spot you know you'll enjoy. Classic options include bars, even if you don't drink, check for mocktail options, coffee shops, great for flexible timing and consider decaf to avoid anxiety, walks, less intense than staring across a table, or activities like mini golf or museums that provide built-in conversation starters. Don't make it a marathon. Leaving when both of you want more builds anticipation for a second date. It's completely normal to get nervous. Allow yourself to feel those nerves. They'll calm down as the date progresses. Try these techniques. Take three deep breaths. Hold a cold drink against your palm or wrist to counteract overheating. Prepare questions in advance. Don't fear silence. Confess your nervousness to your date, or take a quick bathroom break for a reset. If you've given it longer than 5 minutes and know with certainty it won't work out, you have three options. Be honest, come up with an excuse to leave, or stick it out. I recommend sticking it out. It's good practice for your dating skills and conversation abilities. Don't agree to a second date if you're not sure. Tell them you'll text later instead of making empty promises. Remember that intensity doesn't equal intimacy. Strong connections on first dates could be genuine sparks or just anxiety, alcohol, or excitement. True intimacy takes time. Check in with yourself after dates by asking key questions. What was the vibe? What did your intuition say? Did anything trigger negative feelings? How did you feel physically? Was conversation easy? Did you laugh? Could you imagine kissing them? Were they kind to everyone? And most importantly, do you want to see them again? First dates get all the hype, but the real work happens in that hazy period between first date and relationship status. The best thing about early dating? You're not yet deeply attached, making it easier to walk away if deal breakers emerge. Everyone's on their best behavior now, so play detective. Your goal is discovering their basic values and belief systems. Do they align with yours? How do they behave when stressed? How do they treat you when you're triggered? Finding a partner isn't about perfection, but someone who knows their flaws and grows with you. Red flags are serious warning signs that might indicate danger or unhealthy patterns. Watch for avoidant communication styles, chaotic unpredictability, emotional immaturity, self-absorption, and love bombing. When someone showers you with excessive affection immediately, the love should be proportional to how well they actually know you. Other warning signs include friends and family disliking them, not introducing you to their circle, showing no interest in your passions, jealousy, calling all exes crazy, and pressuring you beyond your comfort zone. Green flags support healthy relationships and secure connections, but can be subtler than the blaring alarms of red flags. Look for behaviors that facilitate honest communication, where your date can express needs clearly and respond with empathy when you do the same. They should create security through reliability and follow through on plans. Emotional maturity shows in their ability to name feelings, regulate emotions in challenging situations, and display appropriate vulnerability. They should understand how their behavior impacts you, notice when they've let you down, and sincerely apologize. Awareness of their past trauma and its effects on current relationships demonstrates self-reflection. When you realize someone isn't for you after weighing red and green flags, it's time to end things. While ghosting is only acceptable if safety is a concern, otherwise, be direct. For connections of up to 6 dates, a text saying, "I've enjoyed spending time with you, but I don't feel a romantic connection," is sufficient. You don't owe detailed explanations or need to create insecurities. Don't agree to friendship unless you genuinely want it. If you're enjoying the connection but not ready to commit, take it slow. Maintain your own life and interests rather than becoming enmeshed. See each other once or twice weekly, building anticipation and missing each other between dates. This space allows you to assess compatibility without new love goggles clouding judgment. Defining the relationship should come from a genuine desire for deeper connection, not fear or insecurity. Remember that committing to someone means being ready to follow the relationship boundaries you established together, whether that's monogamy or another arrangement. Before having the conversation, check if you've deleted dating apps and feel good about it, review your deal-breaker lists, and trust your gut about timing. Rarely will you both decide to DTR at the exact same moment. Usually one person initiates this vulnerable conversation. If you're the one asking, bravo for your courage. If you're being asked but aren't ready, request a specific time frame to prepare rather than leaving it open-ended. Remember, this talk isn't about forcing commitment, it's about honest communication. Cover crucial topics like what constitutes cheating, what remains private, how this milestone affects your feelings, changing expectations, ways to create security, and even how you'd prefer to break up if it ever happens. You've defined the relationship. Welcome to the honeymoon phase. This mutual positive projection stage is when everything about your partner seems perfect and their quirks are endearing rather than annoying. While your friends might find your lovesick behavior irritating, this phase builds the foundation for your relationship's future stability. Just don't make irreversible decisions during this time. No moving in together, marriages, babies, joint business ventures, or matching tattoos. Even during the blissful honeymoon phase, watch for warning signs that could indicate future problems. Excessive jealousy or possessiveness might seem like flattering obsession, but could signal unhealthy insecurity. Dishonesty or evasiveness early in commitment suggests deeper trust issues. Frequent fighting during what should be your happiest time together often worsens with time. Don't mistake intensity for intimacy. Pay attention if your partner can't handle even gentle criticism, tries controlling your decisions or social interactions, or reveals fundamental incompatibilities in values and goals. When the initial euphoria fades, maybe after your first real fight, or when your partner's habits suddenly irritate you, you've officially exited the honeymoon phase. While this transition is inevitable and somewhat disappointing, it leads to something potentially better with the right foundation. Many people lily pad from relationship to relationship, bailing once things get real. The key to successful long-term relationships is finding security and deep connection more appealing than constant excitement. Post-honeymoon, the goal is achieving integrated love, a mature, reality-grounded connection that transcends infatuation. This form of love encompasses emotional, intellectual, and spiritual growth while respecting each partner's individuality within a framework of unity and trust. Integrated love acknowledges that both you and your partner have flaws and sometimes act foolishly, but these imperfections don't define either of you completely. Determining what behaviors to tolerate in a relationship remains entirely personal, though certain major deal breakers should never be ignored. Untreated serious addiction, untreated major psychiatric disorders, physical violence or abuse, emotional cruelty or manipulation, patterns of irresponsibility with money, fidelity, parenting, or complete absence of love from one partner. Beyond these clear warning signs, distinguishing between minor flaws and relationship killers requires discernment. When the honeymoon phase ends, you'll inevitably get triggered by your partner. These triggers often stem from past experiences or traumas, causing outsized reactions to small things, like a dirty glass in the sink making you think they've given up on the relationship. The key is recognizing when you're triggered, communicating openly, and working together to create corrective experiences. This means acknowledging the trigger, trusting your partner isn't the person who originally hurt you, reflecting on the root causes together, and possibly seeking professional help. Regular relationship check-ins are essential, ideally weekly, but at least monthly if you're building those muscles. These aren't just casual conversations, but intentional time set aside to connect openly and improve your relationship. Effective check-ins might cover emotional states, communication assessment, conflict resolution strategies, intimacy needs, relationship goals, personal growth, boundaries, trust issues, quality time, and expressions of appreciation. Once the honeymoon phase ends, those spontaneous date nights need to be deliberately scheduled. Put them on your shared calendar and treat them as priorities. They strengthen bonds and deepen intimacy. The activity doesn't matter as much as being intentional about quality time together. Post-honeymoon, you might wonder if someone more perfect exists out there. But perfection is a myth. Lasting relationships require letting go of idealized partners and accepting we're all flawed works in progress. Focus instead on compatibility and appreciation for your partner's positive qualities. By creating a space where you both can be authentically yourselves, quirks, flaws, and all, you're building integrated love. When conflicts arise, we tend to judge ourselves by our intentions while judging others by their impact on us. Good intentions don't excuse hurtful actions. Rather than defending with phrases like, "I didn't mean to hurt you," or "You're taking this the wrong way," simply acknowledge the impact with, "I'm sorry I hurt you." Taking responsibility for how your actions affected your partner, regardless of intent, is crucial for productive conflict resolution. Past traumas and relationship wounds often emerge during conflicts, causing us to project unrelated fears onto current situations. By recognizing these patterns and vulnerably sharing the root causes with your partner, you create healing moments that strengthen your bond and help rewire negative neural pathways from past experiences. When you're triggered during a fight, you're not in the right headspace to resolve anything. You're defensive, reactive, and probably not listening well. The key isn't avoiding triggers, but recognizing when you're triggered and stepping away until you're in your wise mind, a state where you can honor multiple perspectives, admit mistakes, and truly listen. Only resume discussions when you feel emotionally safe and grounded in your care for your partner. The fastest path to resolution is taking turns. One person shares feelings without attacking, while the other listens and validates. Start with, "I felt emotion when you," specific action, not, "I felt angry when you were a fucking asshole." Your partner's job is to reflect your experience in their own words, making you feel heard without defending themselves. Then switch roles. This isn't about determining who's right, but understanding each other's subjective experiences. A proper apology has four simple components: own it, state what you did without excuses, empathize, acknowledge their feelings, actually say it, "I'm sorry," without making it about your guilt, and commit to change. "Next time I'll blah." Not every fight requires an apology. Sometimes agreeing to disagree works better than forcing insincere remorse. After resolving a conflict, reconnect through a shared low-key activity. Then, after a day or two, have a debrief conversation when you're both in an open-hearted space. Ask relevant questions like, why do you think this fight happened? Do you feel understood? Did I take accountability? Regular debriefs help prevent festering anger and contempt, turning conflicts into opportunities for deeper connection. Breakups are devastating, whether you're doing the dumping or getting dumped. The emotional pain is valid, regardless of relationship length or how things end. Many people struggle with timing, wondering if they should have stayed longer or left sooner. Determining whether to end a relationship can feel overwhelmingly complex, especially when you've built intertwined lives. Rather than waiting for some obvious deal breaker to emerge, listen to your gut, that persistent knowing that things need to end, beyond normal annoyances. If you struggle to access your intuition, evaluate your relationship's health by considering whether you're constantly criticizing each other, experiencing contempt, becoming defensive, shutting down during conflicts, losing positive interactions, lacking physical attraction, disrespecting each other, feeling unsupported, dealing with trust issues, or losing your sense of self. When you're ready to break up, timing matters. Not perfect timing, but considerate timing. Start with the classic spine-chilling, "Can we talk?" which allows your partner to mentally prepare. Then be direct. "I've been giving it a lot of thought lately, and I want to break up." One challenge about breakups is that the vulnerability and honesty can feel incredibly bonding, making you doubt your decision. Don't cave to this feeling. It only prolongs the inevitable and forces another excruciating conversation later. When you've been dumped, everything feels shitty. Your heart is broken, your life is in pieces, and you've lost touch with who you are. The version of you that existed in that relationship is gone. You're stuck in that raw place between your old self and whoever comes next. But here's what you need to know. This will pass. Take as long as you need to grieve. Cramming all your sadness into a weekend isn't realistic. Expect healing to be non-linear. To move forward, you need to feel all your feelings. The grief process isn't linear. You'll bounce between stages, sometimes hitting all seven in a single day. Shock and denial, pain and guilt, anger and bargaining, depression, the upward turn, reconstruction, and finally, acceptance and hope. Everyone's grief journey is different, so don't hesitate to seek professional help if needed. I recommend taking a break after a relationship ends. Jumping immediately into dating might temporarily mask breakup feelings, but grief always resurfaces later, usually at inconvenient times as irrational anger, sudden sadness, or an inability to connect with someone new. Take time to discover who you are when single. You're ready to date again when you can think about your ex without significant pain, feel content being alone, have rediscovered your individual interests, want connection rather than just avoiding loneliness, and have learned from your past relationship. Just because a relationship ended doesn't mean it was a waste of time. Each relationship gives you clarity about what works, what doesn't, and how you show up. You learn about your needs, values, and boundaries. Our needs evolve over time, and relationships end not because of failure, but because of growth. The end of a relationship brings both loss and empowerment. We're not mentally frozen in time, but dynamic beings capable of growth. Every year is your best year because it brings new experiences and greater self-understanding.